Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio. Starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is October 2nd, right?
Yes, very good.
Yeah. Okay, cool. It's fall season. It's Libra season. The weather has changed. It's official. It's chilly out here. Got to put your little sweaters on.
In a week, and like quickly.
Yeah, yeah. It was like hot over the weekend. It ain't even been a week. It was hot over the weekend. It was hot like on Friday and Saturday. Nah, you got heat in your crib yet?
Nah, they be waiting until the damn
it's under 55.
So the New York City rules kick in. Yeah, I think it's like, but isn't it like October 15th?
October 15th.
It's October 15th or 55 degrees, but last year they stretched it out. I guess because we had, it's weird, like when we have days that fluctuate up and down, they'll take advantage of that. I think it has to be 55, like consistently.
Yeah. Yeah, it can't be like one day or whatever.
You know? Yeah. So they wait till the last minute out this season.
Yeah. Yeah. So how y'all been good?
I can't complain.
All right. Cool. Yeah. Well, I was down in Atlanta over this weekend past working with Missy Elliott, trying to get her project together. I went to this like crazy, I gotta give a shout out to this crazy party that I went to. Nah, you actually would have enjoyed it.
I saw it and I was excited. Well, I was excited because I'm gonna be in Atlanta this week, but then I saw that it's monthly. I was thinking it was weekly. I was like, oh shit, I'm gonna go to that. But
yeah, no, it's only once. It's the last Friday of each month. It's called the Groove, ATL. It's in this venue called the Basement. In East Atlanta section, and you would like it, and a lot of people would like it because they only play R&B. They play no rap at all.
Oh shit!
Yeah, only R&B all night long. Yeah, exactly. So they play new R&B. So you'll hear like Frank and SZA and Solange and that type of stuff, and then you'll hear old R&B like Shaka and that type of classic dancey R&B stuff, and then they play a lot of. Of course, like Atlanta R&B, like Jagged Edge and Usher and, 112 and, Escape, what I'm saying? And they're playing, Tevin Campbell and they're playing, it's just like it's an R&B night, but it's like literally like if you ever get to go and whoever's listening, if you ever get to go, like wear a t-shirt only because it is literally, it's like being in a house party. It's so hot in that joint and it's a big venue, but it's so packed and hot and it's in a basement. So there's not a lot of ventilation, but
wow.
Are people dancing?
Absolutely, all night long.
Okay,
all night long, people are dancing. Absolutely, people are dancing their asses off. Yeah, it's no bottle service. It's no VIP. It's just like you come in and you party. Yeah. So I mean, for anybody who was down in Atlanta last Friday of any month, I highly suggest that. I had a really great time. And then I wanted to give a quick shout to. I even though I don't eat this shit, I want to give a quick shout to Lay's because they keep coming out with all these different flavors, and I'm actually pretty impressed. They just dropped 4 new ones: bacon wrapped jalapeno papa chips, crispy taco chips, fried green tomato chips, and everything bagel chips.
Yeah, the everything bagel I think has been out for a minute, but yeah, but they're always I think limited editions.
Yeah,
they're limited runs, and I keep saying like they have a cheesy French bread or a cheesy garlic bread or something one that I keep saying I'm gonna try, but then I'm just like it's so fat for me to buy that.
And it's mad salty as well.
Mad salty, mad sodium, mad all of that. Them and Oreos just be going in.
Oreos is wilding. Like they got cookie butter, they got red velvet, they got cinnamon toast.
They have everything. They have a Oreo that has like a cookie and cream filling. So basically, it's mm-hmm. Oreo. Like, you're doing too much.
Do they get all that stuff up here? Because I know, like, they get a lot of stuff. I see all that stuff in Atlanta all the time because Atlanta's a test market.
They get some of it. But you know what? On the whole, you know, Southern grocery stores in general, like, maybe not Southern, but once you go to, like, the DMV and lower.
They be getting all the shit, right?
They're so big. Like, you be seeing all kinds. Like, I was in a grocery store in, where was I? Actually, I was even in Boston. This wasn't even down south. I guess it's just a suburban thing. And I was looking in the dairy case and they had like, this butter. It was like garlic butter and cinnamon butter mm-hmm. and this kind of butter. Whereas the supermarket here, just be butter.
Butter. You know, like,
they be having all the flavors of Simply Juice. They be having like, they be having all kinds of shit you didn't even know existed.
Look, what man, look. Charlene and Pam and Craig, they trying to feed 7 kids.
Word.
Nobody got no time for no Parmesan, extra garlicky butter. Nigga, you going to get this. You going to get this blue bonnet. You going to get this margarine.
And you're going to get your ass margarine, on.
And we're going to call it butter.
And it's already mixed, and we just got slather that shit on.
It's slather it on, nigga.
Yeah, and we're gonna get it, and we're gonna get
keep
on.
Keep it moving.
Cause I gotta go work.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, here.
Can't be late no more.
Here you want that kind of a flavory stuff. You gotta go to Trader Joe's where it's quote unquote specialty. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, you go to the South and you go in fucking Publix or Walmart.
It's lit.
And that shit is right there for $3.99. Yeah, like it's just whatever.
Yeah, that's something I've noticed about being down there. It's just kind of interesting. I just wanted to bring that up. I don't have no, I had a shout out and I'm totally blanking on it and it was a good one. Y'all got any shout outs this week?
I just want to shout out the two TV shows. This Is Us is back.
Yes.
Actually more than two. This Is Us came back last week and immediately jumped straight into a, storyline with the Black family, which we love. And what else? Shit, Will and Grace, which I don't know how many of our followers, I know a lot of our female followers like the show. I used to love the show, has come back after 8 years.
Have you seen the first one yet?
I watched the first one.
How was it?
So, all right, let me be careful how I say this. So here's the thing.
Well, you be careful because I'm not going to be careful.
So the thing that prompted... The thing that prompted Will and Grace even coming back was that the cast got together and did this short that was a reaction to basically Trump being elected, right? Mm-hmm. Because the show was, I think, arguably ahead of its time. Obviously, it was super liberal and all that stuff. So I think I want to wait and reserve judgment until I see episode 2. But I think the fact that the reason the show came back was kind of because they felt like, meaning NBC, the cast and the producers felt like there was a need for that dialogue in a light and funny way in this moment. The first episode was really, like, they tried to pack a lot into the episode, like a lot of Trump references, like they were at the fucking White House. Like there was a lot, there was just a lot all in it. And Will and Grace has always been about a lot of pop culture references, a lot of quick quips, a lot of, you know, tongue-in-cheek jokes and puns and stuff. But it just felt like a lot for the first episode back. If they keep it that heavy the whole way through, I don't think it's going to work. If they just did it for the introduction, for the reintroduction, then that's different.
Okay.
So I'm not giving up on them just yet.
What you saying, bro?
I thought it was a bad show. And let me say this about, you know, I watched Will and Grace. I'm not like, I didn't just tune in just now.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it when it was on before. Yes. I enjoyed it.
And I felt like it felt like a show that had run its course when you watched this. Mm. It didn't feel, you know, it was supposed to feel like a bit of a fresh spin on an old show, and that's not really what it felt like. It just felt like some really old people doing the same shit they were doing before. It was super heavy-handed. And like Nas said, I don't think that they can even keep up with the material on Trump at that level, but I definitely feel like they're going to be using this as a platform, you know, for sort of social commentary a la you know, SNL to some degree. You know, everything is a quick, you know, stab, or, you know, it was just it was a bit heavy handed. You know, I'm with Nah. I'm not going to give up on the show because I actually like the cast. I think the cast is quite great, actually. But, you know, and also, too, Jordan actually read for one of the parts in their show.
Really?
Yeah, she did. She actually did really good, too. But, you know, she didn't get the part. It's funny because when I saw the picture of the girl who got the part, she looks exactly like Jordan.
Wow.
It was funny. But I'm going to stick with the show. I mean, I'm not going to give it up. I got it on record. But if, like, I don't watch it that night, I'm not really tripping.
Right.
It's one of those things.
And I will say, to Sean's point about the show feeling like it hit run its course, on the one hand, the chemistry between all of them definitely still works. But on the other hand, and I can get how this was tricky, the series ended with a flash forward to Will and Grace's kids being in school and all this other stuff, right?
Okay.
But they kind of did a bit of a reboot, and they addressed it in a very tongue-in-cheek way. Kind of like on some, what show was it that did it? New Heart shit. Where like somebody woke, where like Karen Karen woke up out of a drug addled phase. Like, I had a dream that you were married to this one and you were married to that one. And they were like, yeah, we were, but we got divorced. And she's like, but then I had a dream that you had a kid and you had a kid. And they're like, yeah, no way. Nobody wants to see us raising kids. What's funny about that? You know what I mean? So it was kind of like a tongue in cheek thing. But the trick is, to bring them all right back to where they were, like Jack still lives across the street. I mean, across the hall from Will. Grace is back living with Will. Will's apartment is the same. Like, it's just that part it's just kind of tricky to. I get wanting the continuity, but it's been 8 years. Like that part is kind of tricky, and they all are visibly older. You know what I mean? So it's just that
even
part.
Even with their surgeries, older. Even with their surgeries, yes.
Right, and with HDTV now, like it's for real.
Yeah, so.
All right, well, I mean.
But I'm not giving up. I'm glad they're back. It's one of my favorite shows. I'm going to give it a chance.
I realized, like, you know, I don't think I watch any network television shows. Like ABC, NBC, CBS. Except for Blackish.
No, I watch
Blackish. Blackish is back tonight too. I meant to shout that out. How to Get Away with Murder came back last week.
I checked out on that a couple seasons ago. Yeah. I did watch it. And there wasn't no reason. I just kind of lost.
Well, it was too much. This is the final season though. This is the final season.
Okay. So I'm gonna stay on. I checked out on Scandal as well. Like, so I'm gonna try to, catch up. I wanted to.
And this is Scandal's final season too.
Oh yeah, I did read that. Because she's going to Netflix or something, right? With a big deal.
Yeah. I don't think it's just that. I think it's also just like
the show had run its course. Yeah.
There's not much more you can do.
And that's the thing, man. Some shows are designed in a way, like Grey's Anatomy is on what, season 13 or something like that, or 12. And there are certain shows when you have these sort of large ensemble casts, and you can sort of make those changes. You can, you know, follow different storylines or go after fan favorites. It's not centered around one particular person, but it's centered around one particular place. And so that lends itself to carrying on further. I don't know that you have, you know, Scandal without Kerry. And I don't really get the sense that this is all she ever wants to be. And I think she's teetering. She's about to cross that space into this is all she's ever going to be.
Yeah, because you've made several movies previous to to being on that show.
Exactly, and I think I think she's a very talented, actress, and I don't think she shows that in this particular show. I don't think she really shows her chops a lot. So God bless. You know, shit, you had a hell of a run. You
made a gang of bread,
and not just that, you really shifted culture, in my opinion, and how social media interaction can change and shape television shows. Like that shit really became, family time.
Seriously.
On Twitter and at the TV. So I think that was really interesting. And, look, God bless. I got a show too, that came back. Kevin Can Wait. For those that don't watch
Kevin
James.
Good?
Oh, the Kevin James one. And now he has Leah Remini on the show too, right?
Yeah. So really quick. I'm a King of Queens fan. I think King of Queens is one of the top five TV shows ever in the history of television. I think it's incredible. It's still, I probably have 20 episodes on my DVR right now. I'll just watch that and go to sleep. I like Kevin James, but Kevin James is literally playing Doug Heffernan. He just has a different job. Yes. It's basically, it was even, so the first year he had this wife and it was the same thing, you know, fat, chunky, civil servant guy, jolly, has a hot wife. He clearly outkicks his coverage. Mm-hmm. Instead of an old man living in the basement, they have, an adult kid who has her fiance living in the garage. They have two smaller children who are actually not really heavily involved in the show. You see them sparingly. Okay. Long and the short of it is, last year, toward the end of the season, they had two episodes where Leah Remini plays his partner. And they sort of, he sort of comes out of retirement to help her solve this case or whatever. She played on a couple episodes. And then basically they kicked the other lady off the show. Like, there's no other
way around it.
Around it. Like, they fired this lady who I thought was really good and basically came back this season and was like, your mom died. They never mentioned what she died from. There's never a funeral. There's not even like a picture of her hanging anywhere of, reminiscing. Nothing. Like, literally nothing. And now Leah Remini is obviously not necessarily taking the place of his wife, but taking the place of the female lead. And, again, man, it's the same show. And I bring that up.
You think it's going to work?
I think it will work because I think CBS is committed to the show, and I don't think it will be as bad. I don't think it will be so bad that it needs to be canceled, but I don't think it'll be King of Queens-esque. Okay. I don't think it will be a memorable series. I don't think it will be a jackpot for them, but I think it will be sizable enough for them to maintain the show for 3-4 seasons. Okay. I don't see them. They're getting 22 order episodes, 24 order episodes, episodes ordered. So it's not like they're doing 13 episodes and they're struggling and they're mid-season replacements. CBS, God bless them. But, it feels a little dated. And it was sort of the same with Will and Grace. It was just kind of like, guys, we've seen this before. Like, it's okay to go out here and take a risk and take a chance on some young talent. And there's plenty of young talent out there. And it just feels like execs are so under pressure to do more with less.
So just do the same shit over again.
They're just trying to revamp shit. And look, whatever, man. I mean, that's the way the ball bounces, but you can feel it in the content. The content is not fresh. You're not watching something new.
Yeah.
The networks are definitely under pressure, and the really fresh new stuff they're doing is like, what do you call them? What do you call them damn things? Procedurals.
Procedurals, yes.
Oh, okay.
Or like, like top dramas or something like procedural? That. Procedurals is like a Law and Order or a NCIS or something like that. But, I was given a study about how we're going to see an uptick of, partially in response to Trump's election, people want to see like stuff getting solved and stuff getting done on like a higher action level. So we're going to be seeing more, like, there's a new joint with David Boreanaz is coming, where I think he's like a SEAL Team 6 member. So I don't know, something like that.
Team,
like,
no, we're gonna see, no,
yeah,
right.
But we're going to be seeing six. Like more of that type of shit.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I got two show shout outs. I don't know if this is a new episode or not, but I watched Fix My Life. Was that the episode with Turk from the Hot Boys?
Yeah, with
that's
Hot
that new.
Yeah,
I think it is new. But they've taken a hell of a break.
They broke the season up into two parts. It looks like because remember, I think the last season, I'm using air quotes there, was only about six episodes.
And that
was five
the woman in that, some of the women in the house to come back.
Exactly, 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 exactly.
Yeah, so I watched Turk and his old lady. It was, I cut for IAMA anyway, but it was actually a pretty good show. He's very traumatized by being in prison. He was in prison for 8 years. And he was in prison because, somebody lied on him actually and said that him and his wife were selling like heroin. This is what he's saying. Someone lied on him and said him and his wife were selling heroin and had heroin, drugs, and guns in the house. When the cops came to the kicked in the door and went through the house, they had nothing in the house. Now I'm not saying what he was doing on the street, but he had nothing in the house. And according to him and his wife, when they came to the house, they didn't present a warning or nothing. So the reason he said he shot the cops is because he thought people were trying to rob him. Because these guys just kicked the door in with guns blazing.
Pretending to beat up police and trying to rob him.
Yeah, just coming in like, yo, what's up? Where the drugs and the guns at? That's basically what they were saying. And so he was like, I ain't got no drugs or guns. These guys come in with guns out, and he starts shooting. So he did almost nine years in the joint. And this is the wild thing. So he met his now wife. She's only 20 years old at the time. They had only been dating 2 months when he went inside. And she did the whole 8 years with him. And she was only 20.
She's a young woman.
She's now only 35. She's only 35 now.
Ain't no way in the hell. Two months? I've been with you 2 months and I'm 20? Nigga,
no. She did the whole 8 years with him. And then he comes home. She has all these crazy health issues. She ends up...
I think she had breast cancer.
She had breast cancer and a hysterectomy.
Yeah.
So they have two children, but damn. She didn't have any more children. She had mastectomy, so she lost her breast. This girl's only 35, which means, and she said this is like 3-4 years ago, which means that she went through all this, she was like 31. She was like in breast cancer, that usually doesn't happen to women that young. So she's been through a lot. She actually, from the show, she seemed like a really nice girl.
And a hysterectomy. That's
she was. And I really wanted to say that. She was not just nice. She was also very self-aware.
Yep.
And very articulate. Mm-hmm. And I will say, even he was.
Even though
he was carrying a lot of shit, he was very clear on the shit he was carrying. And he was very clear on how that was affecting their life. He was being sort of rebellious about changing those things. He didn't want to change those things.
But he knew what he was clear. Doing.
Exactly. He knew exactly what he was doing. And it really, I mean, you know, look, you know, I love Ayala too, but they just really needed to sit down and talk to somebody. I don't know that they were as far gone as many of the other couples that
often. They just needed a mediator.
When I was sitting there watching that, I was like, you know what? They could have went to a good counseling session and at the church.
Down with Pastor Diggins and then.
Pastor Diggins, yeah, Pastor Watkins. And he would have, you know, put some bless oils on their head and let them talk it out.
Yeah.
It would have been all right. But it felt good to sort of see that.
It did. And it wasn't the usual on the show where she's like wilding on them and yelling at, because she didn't have to, because they were both very, when she would ask them questions, they were very self-aware. And I think she was almost kind of a little bit thrilled, like, oh,
she was.
You're not out here trying to stunt in front.
And they were able to express themselves in clear, coherent sentences and use their words and talk to her in a way that, you know, gave her the information to say, well, you know, you should X, Y, and Z. So it was really a good episode, actually.
Yeah, and they also didn't fight the process at all.
At all.
She didn't really have to drag anything out of either one of them. Obviously I'm going to be watching that every week.
Watch that episode. I just wasn't that interested in
I think it's actually better than you, it'll be better than you think it'll be. Another show I got to give a shout out for, because this is premiere, basically the next 2 weeks is premiering everything. Like you said, Blackish is tonight. Queen Sugar is it tomorrow? I believe
it's tonight and tomorrow.
Okay, cool. So yeah, but I gotta give a shout to Curb Your Enthusiasm on Sunday. It premiered, and that's one of my favorite shows. To me, that's a top five show of all time. And they literally just picked up like right where it left off. Like Larry David was genius because he picked up where the show left off, but there were subtle things he did to like let you know that, you know, time had passed. But it wasn't like a sledgehammer thing. It was like
just
little things he'd say, like, you know, talking about like Jeff Garland's daughter Sammy's getting married now, so it shows you that obviously she's grown up. And last time we saw her, she was probably like 13 or something. So
yeah,
you know, yeah. So just like I just, and the show was just fucking hilarious. Like, I mean, like, laugh out loud funny. So I really enjoy that show, man. So I just have to give Curb its love because it's awesome. I mean, since we're doing TV, you know, might as well get it off to, Mary and Mary premiered. Y'all watch that?
I watched it.
I haven't watched Mary Mary in about 3-4 seasons. Oh, wait, man. This is only season 5. I haven't watched Mary Mary in like 3 seasons.
Okay, so I mean, honestly, you could probably pick right up with it because it ain't much changed since then. You know, Tina's still crazy. She's still mad.
No, something changed. Something changed because Teddy, he threw
Teddy at the end of his rope.
He ain't gonna He ain't gonna keep on dealing with this shit.
Yeah, he's like, look, what are we doing? Because yeah. You're like, I mean, I said I'm sorry. I bought my flowers. I've been reading the word. You know what I'm saying? So what we doing here? Tina's still acting like a plum. Honestly, man, like all jokes aside, I mean, nah, you would know better than any of us because you worked with them. I mean, I think Tina really has like some deep seated mental issues. I don't know what happened to her as a child. I don't know, but like she.
I wouldn't say.
You have the insight. What's up with her?
I wouldn't say it's mental issues. And I mean, I'll be honest. I know Erica and Warren better than I know Tina just because Erica and Warren are more open. Mm-hmm. But, Tina just, I don't think Tina's ever been like the more work Mary Mary became, the less interested she was in it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it was one thing when they were young and doing like Shackles and stuff and shit was coming easy and there was a big budget and there was a lot of money and all that other stuff. But, you know, when it came time to really kind of grind a little bit, she was completely disinterested. And any gaps there's been in Mary Mary, like the fact that Mary Mary hasn't put out an album as a group.
How long has it been now?
I worked their last album. I think that shit was in 2010, maybe? Like, damn. It was before. Mary Mary hasn't put out a new studio album, like a fresh studio album, since before the show premiered.
Wow.
Their last studio album was before the show started. And when for the first season of the show, we did a greatest hits album with a couple of new tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't done another studio. They still owe Sony one album. I mean, they still owe Columbia one album. But,
yeah,
that's
what the part of this season is about. Is pressing to get this out because it seems like they, you know, as just to clarification for people who don't know, when you sign a record contract, it's usually set up so like each album that you, the further you get into the contract, the advances and stuff escalate because the assumption is, if you get this far, you've been successful and made money.
Right.
So we can advance you more money to make another record. So Warren's taking an advance on this last album. And I don't know what the number
is. But he took it a long time ago.
Yeah. And it's gone.
Yeah.
Now Sony's like, well, what's good? You took that, you know, whatever it was, you know, and it could, I mean, with an act like that, you know, with new renegotiations, that advance could have been 500, 750, could even have been a mil because that's an older contract. So,
well, I also think that, yeah, I mean, they were owed money in their contract, but also, I mean, not to get all up in their business, but I'm pretty sure this is addressed in the show. They were in the hole for the last album, like massively. So they never recouped. So I don't know how that affected their deal structure or if it did. And also, you know, times have changed. Like Mary Mary did that deal off the back of Shackles, you know, so it's like, it's a whole different ballgame. I think they're the only gospel act that's signed to a major, you know, still. And, so it's just an entirely different world. Like that contract was done when they were still, you know, charting on, the urban charts, you know, mm-hmm. God and Me and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So, but you know, God and Me was a long time ago now.
Absolutely.
So, and I think obviously the thought was that the show would keep them progressing in a certain direction, but, you know, blame not having the music there, blame licensing fees, like whatever it is, you know, it just hasn't quite worked out that way. Cause that was one issue that we had early was that we just didn't want to pay the money to license their music.
Those show budgets are very, very limited. especially when you're paying talent. And I'm sure that they are looking to, you know, have, you know, that money up front and in their checks. You know what I'm saying? And in addition, just to, you know, add my little two cents in it, man, the thing about the show, and it's something that I noticed before, but it never really dawned on me, like, she's never happy, man. Like, never, ever happy. Like, I can't think of one episode where she is actually enjoying anything. She seems miserable and angry and just, and like, really, cantankerous.
Yes. Yeah. She's always on the edge. Spirited. She's always on the edge.
And she feels like one of those mean ass church ladies. Yeah. That's what she feels like.
Yeah. And like you said, and then from the previews, it looks like Teddy is definitely at his wit's end. He probably getting no ass on the regular no more. He probably just
More so than that. I mean, that is you know, could probably be it too. But also, man, like, imagine living. I mean, listen, I understand that television, and she mentioned this, and I understand that television is it's content, right? It's edited. It is a story being woven together and a story being told. And, you know, when you're always like that, think about if she's always like that on camera, I can't imagine it's any better when the cameras are off.
It's worse.
Right.
I was watching this episode and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, she is needing at everything. Everything is a problem. Everything is the end of the world. Everything is like, it's almost like she's trying to convince herself she's doing all of this for her kids. To be honest, man, I think she needs to go talk to someone alone without her husband.
Right.
You know, just go figure some things out.
But I think she can't let herself do that. I mean, listen, I haven't been around Tina in years and years and years. So I don't propose to actually know anything about what she's feeling or thinking right now, but I do feel like she definitely is trapped between being Tina of Mary and just wanting to be Tina, you know, just wanting to like live her life. But I also think there's a conflict. Like, I think there's some jealousy that Erica is more popular, that Erica is more mainstream.
Yes. Erica's had
solo hit records. Erica can get shit popping without Tina.
Because you know why? Because Erica works. Like, let's just put the shit out there. Mm-hmm. Erica gets up off her ass and she gets in that 10 passenger van.
Yep.
And Warren will drive her ass to a show in Buckbuck, Louisiana, and she'll get on that stage and perform like she had the Stella Awards.
Yep.
Meanwhile, Tina be huffing and puffing because they couldn't send the damn 2017 Escalade. Like, that's what the problem is. And I feel like she sabotages that with this sort of irate feeling because she doesn't want to do that. And she is resentful that she has to do that. Like, the same thing I said about the album shit. You don't want to do the album? Okay, you know what? Give them back their fucking money. How about that?
Right.
Yeah, you took that advance.
You took the money. Right? Ain't that the scene from Tina when Ike said, I done took a whole lot of money.
I got to make good.
I got to make good.
I mean, and that's the thing, right? So it's like, as much as Tina would complain that she doesn't want to do the Mary stuff, she also doesn't like when Erica can just get shit popping
without her,
right? Mm-hmm. So I think that she really is conflicted between, you know, wanting to have this lifestyle and be a star and be beloved and do all this other stuff, and also feeling really judged and resentful of the fact that she's being judged. But like, you're mean, Tina. Like, you come off as super mean.
Yeah.
And the irony is that, depending on what your style of singing is, Tina is actually like the better singer, at least in terms of a gospel singer. Tina is that one that will like reach down and pull your heart out.
Have the goosebumps and all that.
Yeah. And you know, she got that struggle in her voice. Erica is much more mainstream with it. And her vocals aren't as gritty, like they're much clearer and crisper. And Tina has like that grit and that soul. But yeah, it's just like, I don't know, like, you're right. She needs to talk to somebody on her own, but I don't know that she ever will. And you know, but also like their family dynamic is a little crazy. I mean, their parents married and divorced each other 3 times. You know what I mean? Like, there's a bunch of them and they got brothers and mostly
girls. They're almost all girls.
Yeah. Like, one or two boys, and one of them, I think, like, maybe he's in jail or was in jail. I don't know. Like, it's a whole
thing.
And I think she probably also can't really forgive Teddy completely.
Yeah. Well, I don't think she's forgiven him at all. And I think that that's sort of the, you know, I hate to use this term for lack of a better term, but that's sort of the prison that he looks like he's in.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know that a big part of this is because of your doing, but it's almost like, okay, at what point do we really start to move on?
Yeah. And
how long, right? Like, how long do I have to do this? And, you know, a big part of that is, you know, like he said, like she tried to kill him. That wasn't like no for play.
Yeah.
Nigga, that was, she was not playing.
Yeah. Yeah. She smashed this nigga's car, cameras, and. So, yeah, a piece to them. So we're going to keep up with that one, too. I mean, you know, because, you know.
And God bless him. I wish him well, but.
Yeah, it's, you know. So we got to give rest in peace to Hugh Hefner, who passed away last week at 91 years old. Long life and a long run. Just realizing, looking at this thing, his wife he was married to when he died, is only 31 now.
And she wasn't in the will, right?
Yeah, and she's only 31 now. So that, and they got married in 2012. So when they got married, she was, what's that, 5 years ago? She was 26. And she married an 86-year-old man? That's disgusting, dude. Like, what are you doing?
It is very much disgusting. Like, I think there was a rumor, though, that, like, even with him being married to these other women, wasn't it something like his first wife, the one he was married to for the longest, still had a house on the property? Or something like that?
Probably.
The oldest wife, yeah, but he's been married 3 times. The oldest wife was his college sweetheart, Millie Williams. They was married for 49 and 59. And then he married a woman named Playboy model named Kimberly Conrad.
Maybe I'm thinking of Kimberly Conrad.
Yeah, because I think the oldest wife, I don't know if she's even still alive, but obviously she'd be 90-something years old. So.
Yeah, I think there was a wife that still lived on the property, and it was speculated that Hugh's later marriage and the girls he had living in the house was really all more like on some stunt shit.
Yeah, because he's 91, huh? Who's he fucking like that?
Yeah, like, and he was really still a family man with his old family. And I think I read that old girl, the new wife, ain't in the will.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, I mean, the game is the game. Right. Yep. And I mean, I feel like they should give us something for sucking an 85-year-old dick. I just feel like you got to give us something. I mean, pay a car note off or something, man. Give us something, man.
Like a 60-year age difference. Like, what are we doing?
Get a little 1200 square foot condo or something, man.
Exactly. With a little one bedroom.
A little one bedroom
in the back.
I'm sure she got a couple dollars, but she ain't get
caked out.
Well, I financially, I don't necessarily know that Playboy is doing all that well. I know a big part.
Yeah, they say it wasn't.
It wasn't doing all that well. Then I believe they sold that property.
On Fifth Avenue?
The Playboy Mansion. Yeah,
they
sold the mansion. I think it was listed at like some ridiculous price, like $200 million. And
yeah, because all that property,
that's what it was. But they said that the house was in terrible condition.
Yeah.
In comparison for that sort of bread.
We'll probably knock it down, honestly.
Yeah, I think that's what happened. The person, I think they wound up paying like $100 for it, and then they raised the property.
Yeah.
Like, so
according to TMZ, the Crystal, who's the 31-year-old, she gets $5 million. This is because of the prenup agreement, I guess. She would get $5 million and a house in the Hollywood Hills, and that's it.
All right.
It was a nice lift for being married 5 years to a 90-year-old man. You know what I'm saying?
It's
good. Now you can go ahead and fuck niggas your own age. And be normal.
And you set up. Yeah, you
have a child when you're ready and all that. You're only 31. You got time. Yeah, you set up your good money. So God bless Crystal, you know? And, you know, Hugh, a lot of people didn't realize that Hugh, was very involved in the civil rights movement in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And he was very involved with, he put a ton of, black act. He had a television show back in the, I think it was the mid 60s. And he put a ton of black acts on his show, you know, Sammy Davis and Bill Cosby and, you know, cats like that who, you know, didn't have a lot of outlets. So, he put, he had,
and,
to, Yeah, Harry Belafonte, Dick Gregory.
Dick Gregory, yep.
Yeah, and the civil rights activists and stuff like that back, you know, back when it was, they were definitely not looked upon as they're looked upon in now in hindsight.
Right. So. And Dick Gregory, I think, has said that playing the Playboy Club was his first, I think he said it was his first integrated gig. I feel like that's what he said.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think I did hear that. Yeah. So, you know, he was woke as they say.
Also, I know it became a joke, and I don't even know if younger people still even get this reference anymore, but it became a joke after a time of like, oh, I read Playboy for articles.
Mm.
But the Playboy writing was really strong writing.
Yeah,
it was.
It was real.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Like, it was incredible journalism.
Yeah. So, yeah, he put his game down. So I had to show him love. I wanted to mention Def Comedy Jam.
Hold on, man. Just give a rest in peace to Tom Petty as well while we were in that space.
Well, I got
no, you don't want to rest in peace Tom Petty? Why? What you got against Tom Petty?
I ain't got nothing against no Tom Petty. I just...
Because you're a crack-ass cracker? What happened?
No. I mean, look, rest in peace to Tom Petty because he put his game down, but I didn't really know much of his music. I felt like I was listening to Kornheiser's podcast today, and David Aldridge said something that I feel a lot when people like that pass away.
Anybody
like,
bandwagoning?
Not even bandwagon, but it's just like, because he was like a white rock main, you know, turned into a white rock mainstream guy. Again, this is no disrespect to him. He put his name down. He's a great musician. All that. I got that. But white people and press and media expect black people to know all who these people are because they know who they are. And I'm like, I don't know no Tom Petty records.
Think you do and you just don't know you do. So like, this is my thing. I didn't post any big old tributes to Tom Petty or anything. But between Free Falling and like, but in high school, like I couldn't get away from Tom Petty. If you watched MTV at any point between 90 and fucking 94, like Tom Petty was all over that shit. There was Free Falling, which I think was like 90, 91.
I think I know that one.
And I'm free.
Yeah, I know that
everybody
one.
Knows that song.
And then Last Chance with Mary Jane, that fucking video was everywhere. You know the video. It's him dressed in a lab coat, dancing with a dead Kim Basinger. Everybody knows the fucking video. It was all over the place. You do know that song.
I mean, I'm not trying to be,
I understand your point, and I think that.
And I'm not trying to be disrespectful.
Right.
I think that's a fair point that's made. You know what I'm saying? White folks do expect you to know some shit just because they know it. You know what I'm saying? But it just the same way I feel like, you know, I don't need to know everything to understand someone's impact. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, he had an impact on music. There's a good chunk of, if you can take 10 years from his career, I mean, can you really talk about the 90s and talk about pop music, rock music without mentioning him? I don't think you can. I mean, I think it's fair to give him a rest in peace. But listen, here we give him, but we also going to give people like Johnny Taylor
and Joe Tex
and
Bobby Blue Blaine.
All of them getting their
talking about. Here. I ain't no white folks come up to me when Maurice White and Luther pass away. But I'm supposed to know about Tom Petty. And I ain't disrespecting Tom Petty.
But you know what? That's fair. And that's a valid complaint that we always all have. Like, it goes back to everything about fucking America is that white is the standard, right? Like that. Yeah, like, everybody's supposed to know all white shit. All white pop culture shit. All music shit. But like, our shit is like some secret whatever shit.
Secret society.
But where Tom is concerned, I think the thing is, what I saw a lot of people saying is that like Kels said that he was kind of her foray into like white rock. Okay. And a couple of other people said that they were like on him. Like I said, if you were listening, you know, the radio was still very segmented, but video wasn't. So like I said, if you turned on MTV in the early 90s, you were going to see Tom Petty. Even if you didn't realize who he was, you might know what the music was. Mm-hmm. To me, there was a real fascination in that era. And not just with the white rockers, I also have this feeling about Gladys, Aretha, and Patti, but a fascination with people who survived like decades and stayed not just relevant, but like actually stayed popular and mainstream. Mm-hmm. So like Petty has been around since the 70s. So like Petty, Aerosmith, all of them that were having like mainstream pop moments in the 90s and like keeping that run going, I always had a fascination with that because they weren't new to me. I knew how, even if I didn't know them, I knew like.
You knew their name.
Come out yesterday. Yeah. You know, so that part always kind of, it definitely earns my respect. Petty also apparently had his fist up a little bit. Like he had some comments about, you know, the fucking rebel flag and how he regretted, wearing it, utilizing it,
mm-hmm.
how stupid the stance was around it. So I think some other people were really just giving him some props because he was an ally.
Okay. I mean,
which he definitely doesn't look like the ally.
Yeah.
Type,
but, yeah. I mean, all right. Well, shit. I'm just saying when Kashif and Sugarfoot and Sugarfoot and Sugarfoot from the damn Ohio player passed away, I ain't seen no white folks yelling about that. When Bobby Blue Band had passed away and Ruth Brown, I ain't seen nothing about no Ruth Brown and no damn some Solomon Burke died. They ain't seen nobody no Solomon Burke.
This nigga said Sugarfoot.
Sugarfoot done gone to glory. That's all I'm saying. I just want to, you know, make sure our folks get their props as well.
Of course. And I think we do that here. We send them up proper.
We definitely go send them up right now. Ain't no other way around it. I wanted to mention, Def Comedy Jam.
Def Comedy Jam has seeing mixed things.
I watched 3/4 of it. Def Comedy Jam has a 25th anniversary special on Netflix, you know, obviously commemorating the show, and they brought most people back. I didn't see I don't think Tommy Davidson is there, which was surprising to me, and I didn't see the memorial part, but do they mention Robin Harris? Robin Harris is a quick mention on the front side, but I didn't see, like, I thought there would be more like a full on dedication.
They did a in memoriam.
Okay, and they mentioned him in that?
No, they didn't mention Robin Harris.
Which
they
is shocking to me.
Well, one, I don't even
know. Did Robin Harris do? Did Robin Harris
yeah.
Robin?
Yeah, yes, absolutely he did.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he did that Comedy Jam with the whole Bebe's kids and all that. Yeah, uh-huh.
Okay, I don't remember him doing it.
Yeah, I didn't remember. But either way, they definitely did a piece. You know, they did like Patrice O'Neal, Todd, and a few other folks that had passed. So that it wasn't. I mean, I don't know that they got everyone.
Maybe yeah.
But they definitely.
I mean, Robin was just a big name. I thought that they would. But anyway, needless to say, so pretty. You know, whoever's alive and well. Pretty much was there at the show. It looked like they did it at the Beverly Wilshire. It looked like the same room. And so all the comedians are there, you know, Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock, Steve Harvey, Cedric the Entertainer, Adele Givens. Oh, the other one I guess I wasn't shocked because she's so damn ornery right now, is Monique wasn't there. There's a clip of her, but she wasn't at
we
the show.
We probably think she's beyond that shit now.
Yeah, yeah. I guess she's that's so ornery, she's so damn ornery now that she don't.
You know, she's an Oscar winner.
No, it was two of them. Monique wasn't there, and Samora wasn't there. I was very surprised.
I'm surprised at Samora.
Yeah, I was very surprised at Samora. So I obviously there must still be some certain people must still have some issues, but for the most part, they had a great turnout. A lot of people there.
But how funny was it?
I enjoyed it. I think I enjoyed it way more than Brud did. Like, it was funny. Like, they would, you know, some people did their act. Adele did a set. Bill Bellamy, he wasn't really that funny. Steve Harvey.
Did they do like their greatest hits or they did new shit?
No, they do new shit. They do new shit. Tracy Morgan kind of spoke. He didn't really, Martin came up, but he spoke. Martin wasn't trying to be funny, which I was surprised at. And then the best bit of it is, D.L. Hughley and Dave Chappelle. They get up to read a thing, and they keep making mistakes with the teleprompter, and they just start riffing, and they riff for probably a smooth 10 minutes. Like, they just...
Yo, D.L. Hughley used to be so fucking funny.
Yeah. He's like, funny real, in Dave Chappelle's, because you can they basically let the tape roll, and they just start, Dave just starts talking to people in the audience, and he shouts out like Earthquake and Bruce, and like, they're all there, you know what I'm saying? So,
right.
Like, but I enjoyed it, but bro, you said you didn't really like it that much.
Yeah, I wasn't crazy about it. I mean, God bless him. You know, I think it was pretty cool for them to come out and come together. I didn't really laugh a lot, like almost at all. You know, again, I don't know if it was the material. I don't know if it was, you know, only people coming up there for a little short bursts and you couldn't really get into a rhythm, but it wasn't that funny to me. You know, but, you know, again, it meant something. I'm glad that they were able to sort of celebrate that. I mean, the one cool thing is that you do see that, you know, Russell and Stan Lathan and Bob Sumner, they really sort of captured a moment of black comedy and really propelled a lot of guys to careers that would not have had those careers. Absolutely a lot of those not. Guys.
Pretty much none of those, them.
A lot of those niggas would be telling jokes for chicken dinners right now.
Yep.
A lot of
yep, because none of because so, as they all kept saying, like before Def Comedy Jam, pretty much was nobody on that show could get on television. You know, yeah. Arsenio I think was over by that point or ending.
Yeah. Or it was ending. Yeah,
ending,
was
ending. And that was it. Like there was no other option.
Yeah, because Comic View didn't come until after Def Comedy Jam.
Yeah, and you wasn't getting on Letterman and all
and
that.
And you
shit.
Couldn't get and you couldn't right. get loose. You couldn't get loose on any of
right,
those.
Right, right. Yeah. A lot of network TV. Well, that's the other thing.
A
I think
a lot of those actors have clean sets.
Yeah, because you can't curse and stuff like that.
Right. But that's what I was gonna say. That's the other thing. There wasn't even. I mean, I guess there was like Comic Strip Live and stuff like that. But aside from HBO specials, I don't even think there was anything formatted like Def Comedy Jam where you could just get on there and rock out.
Mm-hmm. And even most of the HBO specials were white comics. Right. There was a few black comics, but it wasn't like
it was like mainstream
how Netflix is now. It was like giving everybody a shot. It wasn't like that. Yeah. I used to actually go to those tapings pretty regular because I knew Bob pretty well. So like I could kind of go whenever I want.
I really wish I could have gone. They looked like
oh,
so
man.
Much fun.
Oh, it was a blast. They looked like so first much of fun. All, first of all, everybody for the music business would be there. You know what I'm saying? Like, cause you just go, it was right. It was a theater right on 40 some street. So it's real central to the city. And, they were definitely just like on the show. It was like just funny as shit. You know, Capri's DJing and da, da, da. And I mean, just on some nigga shit, it was a great place to take a date. You was lit. You was in there. Yeah. You was having a good time. You was laughing. You ain't spend no money.
I mean, y'all was definitely gonna end up on camera though.
Yeah, that was the thing. You want to try to kind of sit in the back.
That was sticky, right? Like
okay, yeah, you gotta do.
We gonna be back here. We're not gonna sit. Yeah. No, we're not gonna sit in the front. Oh yeah. No.
I actually even sat up in the box a couple of times. So it was that was fun. I mean, again, maybe I was just reminiscing while I was watching it more than some others, but I had a good time. Did y'all read this stuff I sent about Cuba?
No.
Okay.
But
so
I'm aware.
I mean, I'd heard about it, but
you heard about it? Yeah. So right after Trump got elected, you know, as most people know, there's like diplomats and elected officials from countries that live in kind of other countries, you know, like in embassies and stuff like that. So like right after Trump got elected, a bunch of U.S. diplomats that lived in Cuba fell ill and they all were shipped home, like deathly ill. I mean, I think most of them recovered, but they didn't kind of know what happened. So they did some investigating. It sounds kind of crazy, but apparently there was like some spycraft stuff and counter-espionage stuff going on. And,
like some sound wave.
Yeah, it was some sound wave thing that they were pointing at the embassy that was making people like, that does make people like deathly ill. They don't know what it's, who, they, from what when I read about it, they still don't quite know who's doing it. If it's Cubans or is it Russians behind Cuba.
So that you guys know where, so the American embassy in Cuba, in Havana, it's pretty exposed. It stands completely alone by itself, and it's right on Malecón, which is the main thoroughfare. So, like, and it's the tallest building in that area, and it has a really big courtyard around it. So, if somebody wanted to shoot some beams at it,
that's right there. Yeah.
It's completely vulnerable and exposed. Like, you have a vantage point from fucking from anywhere. Like, you can sit on a roof somewhere, anywhere in fucking New Havana, or like around the edge of Old Havana, and just have at it. And there's a gigantic courtyard in front of it where, like no cars can park or anything like that. So you also have a pretty unimpeded, like shot at it if you just want to sit in front of it as like a pedestrian Because there's like a statue and some other shit. So like it's pretty exposed in that manner.
Yeah. So they I think we lost Nye. Nye, you there? Oh no, we lost the bishop. Oh, there she goes.
No, I'm here.
Okay. You went black for a second. So right now, U.S. diplomats are literally selling off all their possessions and coming back to the States. And like a lot of these diplomats haven't lived in the States in years. They've been living in Cuba for like 10, 15, 20 years. But again, one day I'm hoping we'll kind of get to the bottom of this, but again, once Trump, basically, man, once Trump got elected, the whole world done turned to shit. Like really, everything is fucked. Not that everything was perfect before, cause it wasn't. But once this dude's got in office, everything is so fucked up, including like nature. You know what I'm saying? Like storms and with mud.
Well, I mean, it's not just that. I think that this is something that's really going to take effect because the U.S. just expelled 15 Cuban diplomats, dude.
Yeah, sent them back.
So basically, that whole,
you know, God bless you and Nye for making it over there, because I think that shit's about to be over with.
I think it's about to be a wrap.
You're about to have to start going to Canada and shit again.
Yeah, or if you even want to take a chance and go.
Yeah, because the problem is that, man, you do not want to come back with that stamp on your passport.
Yeah. It's bad.
There's no way around that shit.
Yeah. So this Cuba thing was just really interesting to me because I first heard it on Rachel Maddow talking about it. It's like, and it sounds like a spy novel, like, or like a movie, but it's really it's really happening, you know what I'm saying, with these sound waves or whatever they're sitting out in the sky that's making people definitely ill. So I just thought it was a really interesting story. Bro, did you want to talk about this story about the stabbing in the Bronx?
Yeah, I mean, we can mention it. I didn't pull it up yet. I have to get the names right.
Okay. In the meantime, I want to mention Trump. Trump went to Puerto Rico. Every time I say this nigga's name, I got to take a deep breath. Trump went to Puerto Rico today to kind of allegedly show some support for the people who are ravaged by the hurricane. The death toll in Puerto Rico is now 34, but still climbing because there's still a lot of places that they haven't been able to get to because the roads being washed out and, you know, and no electricity and, you know, people just not being able to get to places. So we don't really quite know what's going to, happen. Trump went over there and basically said it's not a real catastrophe like Katrina was. Like y'all actually cool over here. Like,
yeah, like the way he said it and he contradicted himself even while he said it. He was like, something like, be thankful, you know, that you weren't dealing with a real catastrophe like Katrina, even though this was terrible and nobody ever seen anything like it, you know, but he was talking about the death toll. Mm. And what somebody mentioned was that Katrina death toll wasn't that death toll a week after Katrina, you know, like it took time. And that death toll includes people who died as a result of factors around the storm. So in Puerto Rico, where you have no power, people in rural areas have no water. Mm-hmm. Like I saw somebody tweet that her sister-in-law's grandmother is on dialysis and is in a really rural area and is almost out of food and had no power for her dialysis, you know? So it's like, I think those words are going to come back to haunt Trump. And it's ironic that he referenced Katrina because people have been saying this is Trump's Katrina, not based on the disaster itself, but based on his response, right? And the kind of lack of compassion, the nonchalance, the lack of urgency. And for him to bring up the comparison himself, again, your man's just, he has no self-awareness. Like, he's so bad at this. But the thing about this whole Puerto Rico thing with Trump is like, even if it's finally sunk in for him that this is a U.S. territory and these are U.S. citizens, which I don't quite know.
I don't think so.
He still, it's like he looks at them as an island of the help. Like, the way he, even the way he addresses them, he's so condescending. Yeah. Like when he was talking to them today, he was like, I got to tell you, Puerto Rico, you really kind of, you know, blown, you really kind of destroyed our budget because we're spending a lot of money on you. Nigga, what?
Yeah.
What? Like they did it on purpose. Like they went overtime on some shit. Like, are you kidding me right now? Like, what? Yeah. So it's like the whole thing is just all kind of, it's so condescending. Like it's like, they don't want to do for themselves. They don't, what? It's all terrible.
I was actually waiting. Honestly, man, I ain't going to front. I was waiting to hear a story today about somebody in Puerto Rico, like, blacking out on this dude. I mean, maybe they kept, they really, you know, made sure the only people around him were people who weren't going to do that. But I was waiting to hear, like, about some Puerto Rico people just going ham on him, like, on some fuck you shit. And maybe they did. Maybe they were speaking Spanish. He didn't understand.
Maybe I did hear that he left. I mean, I'm sure he didn't go that many places, first of all. And I did hear that he left an hour earlier than scheduled. Mm. But also, like, the one person who I think a lot of people were waiting for him to talk to, see whatever, was the mayor of San Juan.
And he didn't, right?
And, no, he did. It was very brief. But, of course, he ain't stick his chest out when he saw her face to face. But her thing is, like... He's a pussy. He's a fucking Twitter thug. Yep. But also, like, her thing is, I don't really give a fuck about this nigga. I'm just trying to get help. You know what I mean? It's not about Trump personally. And she had not actually addressed Trump personally or even said the president until he started coming at her. She was like the administration, FEMA, them. You know, she had never been like Trump until he started coming at her. And her thing is, just like, I'm just trying to get help for my people.
Yeah,
like,
I'm literally walking around here watching people die
and
be sick from lack of, you know, insulin and medicine and all that and everything. Like, I don't give a fuck about what you feel. So, I mean, it's crazy, man. That's unbelievable, man. You pulled it up, bro?
Yeah. So last week at a high school in the Bronx, which is a Bronx school for urban wildlife conservation, which is like weird. I'd never heard of that, but apparently they have a lot of these specialty sort of high schools. Okay. Now, there was a fatal stabbing, which I think might have been like the first one in quite some time, a little over 20 years, since someone has been killed in a classroom. Abel Cedeno, a Hispanic kid, a Latin kid, I should say, 18 years old, fatally stabbed Matthew McCree and injured his friend Arian Layboy. So apparently they were in class and his account, you know, the kid Matthew McCree, the victim, and they just spoke about the victim, that he was, you know, teasing him,
bullying him.
Bullying him, and the kid just sort of fucking snapped
and
stabbed him in the chest twice, and it was so fast that the other kid, Arian Layboy, didn't even realize that there was a knife.
Wow.
And when he tried to, you know, come up, you know, on the guy, I guess, to defend his friend, he was cutting his arm. It was
slashed him.
He slashed him pretty bad to the point where the kid passed out.
He
passed out. So apparently Abel Cedeno has identified as being bisexual. The kid is 18 years old. And if he's taking classes with, you know, 15 and 16 year olds, I would anticipate that he hasn't really done well in school. I think this is one of those schools that they've sort of renamed, but from all accounts by the news that the school had been a shit show. You know, kids just in the hall,
wilding, just
out here, you know, doing whatever it is they do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really wanted to mention it because, you know, this kid went online, he ordered a knife and brought it to school, and everyone is seemingly like, look, I don't want to dismiss the victims here, but it's just kind of wild to me that everyone is sort of pretending like this kid just did this out of the clear blue sky. You know, when I'm looking at the reports now, they're saying, like, the investigators are saying that's the first time that they've had an issue. I don't think that they're suggesting that this is the first time the kid has been bullied, but they're suggesting that this is the first time that these two kids in particular had an issue which I'm not quite sure, because when this initially happened, it was very quiet. You know, usually they get a lot of students to talk, or, you know, kids will say things. And it seems like now kids are sort of coming to the defense of Matthew McCree. I mean, obviously he's not here. He can't, you know, defend himself. And again, I want to be careful that I'm not sounding callous to a kid that's been killed, mm-hmm. right? Like, I don't want to dismiss that. But it was just wild to me, man, sort of listening to how we want to pretend like that's not a thing. And I think, you know, you went to, you know, high school and is, you know, a big high school. I went to a big high school. I mean, yeah, man, that's a thing.
Yeah.
Okay, kids get teased and tormented, especially at that age.
Especially apparently if, this if kid's you're, family. If you're, you know, you're gay or very effeminate as a boy, you're gonna get
so you're yeah. So you're getting that. You're getting the fact that he hasn't, you know, really done well in school. He's probably being teased on that end.
Yeah.
He was going through some other stressors. Apparently, his mom is stuck in Puerto Rico. He, you know, can't really talk to her. Again, I don't know if that's. You know, I don't know if that's being used as a leverage of an excuse. I don't know what that relationship is, meaning, you know, is that just, you know, someone trying to use that to justify his mental state, or if that's a real thing?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not qualified to answer that, but I just find it, I find it a little disheartening that two young lives
are lost,
and one kid is going to be traumatized. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
From this stabbing. I mean
he's going to go to jail. It's a murder charge.
Yeah. He's going to jail for real.
For real, 18. Yeah, and he's gay, and it's going to be brutal.
And it's going to be super, like, it's just sad from all ends. I mean, you know, people were talking about the teachers and, oh, the teachers didn't, you know, do anything. But, you know, students, you know, again, man, hindsight is always 20/20. I would bank that those teachers were shocked.
Yeah.
And sort of thrown off and taken aback and didn't really know how to react.
I mean, yeah.
You don't see someone gushing blood in your classroom every day. That's just not something normal. So they installed metal detectors the following day. Apparently there was another knife found at the school. It fell out of a kid's backpack or whatever. They said they weren't going to press, you know, they weren't going to hold the kid, you know, charges, but they confiscated the knife or whatever. But, you know, this is one of those things, man, where, you know, New York City and public school systems, I've seen people tried to blame the administration, saying that there was a lot of changeover. There wasn't a lot of changeover. You know what I'm saying? Like, the principal had been there. I guess this was the third principal in the last 3 years. The previous principal was there for a year. The one before that was there for 7 years. This is not an administrative issue.
Yeah, like, it's not like just every year and a half they got a new principal.
Yeah, and we understand that that doesn't change anything in terms of the people who handle discipline. It's usually not the principal who handles these sort of disciplinary actions with kids. It's usually deans. It's usually people, you know, the heads of departments know who these kids are. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't make it seem like this is an administrative flaw.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, this sounds like a series of unfortunate events. And all of these kids, you know, probably, you know, had a hand in this. I don't think there are no innocent bystanders in the way that it's being portrayed.
Yeah, yeah. It's horrible. Like you said, it's like honestly, like, it reminded me of that part of it, reminded me of Moonlight. You know what I'm saying? It was a similar thing where he got teased and he came in and smashed the kid with the chair and ended up going to jail and doing time, you know? I don't know.
And that's the thing, man. That's the thing. Like, what, like, for a kid to, you know, again, this wasn't a kitchen knife. This was not a kid who was sort of, you know, this was something.
Grab the knife out of his mom's kitchen or whatever.
Yeah, this is something that the kid thought about, right? So, you know, I don't know, you know, I don't really like to play what was his mental state game. The kid might very well be violent.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
he might very well be that.
Could
but
be.
I also, you know, let's not make it seem like this was unprovoked or there was no provocation at all. And I'm not saying that that kid deserved to die. You know, I hope it doesn't come off like that. But I think we need to have conversations with our children just about fucking being good people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, just fucking leave people alone.
Yeah, exactly. Man. It's not necessary for you to bully this kid for whatever reason.
Yeah, and you can, and I swear to you, before they even mentioned that the kid was bisexual, when I saw them leading him out of handcuffs.
Yeah, I knew right away.
I said, this boy, he looked a little, you know, I don't, you know, not to use derogatory
term. He's effeminate.
Yeah. I was like, okay, I totally see this. Mm-hmm. I totally see this scenario.
Yeah.
We've seen this in high school before.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the thing about that kid, I mean, for what it's worth, I mean, no mean shit, but like, he's kind of tall. He was like the one who stabbed him. He wasn't a little teeny boy. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, he looked like he's about 6'2". Like, he's like a big kid. Like, all right,
And also, man, you have to understand that when you live in environments, these kids are still growing up in environments where they have to operate with this mentality of being a wolf.
And survival of the fittest.
When you are constantly being picked on and bullied, that shit trickles from school. It comes to your block. Yep. And then from your block, it comes to your building.
Yep.
And before you know it, that shit is at your front door every day of your life.
Yep.
I couldn't imagine that. I couldn't imagine that.
He's like, if I don't handle it, obviously, I don't think he went out to murder the boy, but he was like, yo, I got to handle this now, because if I don't, it's never going to stop, and it's going to be other people picking on me, and it's just going to go on forever.
And it probably was a bunch of other people picking on him. That kid might have just picked the wrong day
to talk
at the
shit.
Wrong time to do what occurred that provoked that led up to this. I don't want to say provoked.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, leading into the last topic, it kind of leads me into the last topic of the evening, which is the shooting in Las Vegas. Guy named Stephen Paddock, 64-year-old white cat from who lived, I don't know where he's from initially, but he lived in Las Vegas.
He lived in Mesquite, Nevada, about 90 miles away.
Okay. Went into a hotel with a arsenal. I'm still trying to figure out how he got all these guns up the
hotel. They said he had it in a golf bag.
Yeah. And also he was there over a couple of days. So my guess is that he brought it in a little at a time.
And he's white, so nobody's checking his shit anyway.
And he's also a gambler, so he's probably a VIP.
He was in an 1,800 square foot room.
Yeah, so they probably loaded the shit on the cart and brought it up for him, and he told them it was some other shit. Yeah.
Yeah, and down below there was a big country music concert, 22,000 people there to see. I think this guy Jason Aldean. I don't know if he was the headliner, but he was playing at the time. And your man Stephen Paddock shot out two windows of the hotel and proceeded to just like let off mad clips at people that like literally right down below. So it was an open air concert. So there was nowhere to hide. And he's shooting down on you from a hotel. It's literally shooting fish in a barrel. Cause he can, he's just, you know, even if he ain't aiming, he's going to hit people.
Going to hit somebody cause he's spraying.
It's a compact audience, you know,
and because it's a concert and it's loud, there's a delay in reaction because people are thinking it's pyro.
Yeah,
it's taking people a minute to register that's exactly what's going on,
and they don't know where he's shooting from because, like I said, he's 32 floors up, so it's not down on ground level shooting directly. So you don't know where the gunfire is coming from. You just know people's getting mowed.
If you watch the video, you can almost see that people didn't even start to react until he probably had let off maybe 30 rounds.
Yeah, exactly. So
probably it probably wasn't until people saw people literally going down.
Yeah, going down with brains flying and all that. So as of the last time I looked, which was this morning, the death toll was 59 and the injured toll was 527. And I think that's going to keep changing.
That injured toll also includes people who were hurt in the process of like the aftermath, like getting trampled. Yeah.
I think most of the people were trampled, honestly. Like 500 some people. Like, a lot of people was, like, stomping on each other and trampling each other to try to get out and running over each other. 500 people injured is, like, a lot of people. Like, that's a lot of people. And, again, I think these tolls are going to keep climbing.
And right now the death total, this is the largest, I guess, what's the right title for it? The event that's caused the largest amount of deaths on
U.S. soil. Mass shootings.
Well, not just mass shooting, but the event that's caused the largest amount of deaths on U.S. soil, the single event causing the largest amount of deaths on U.S. soil since September 11th.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize
And in terms of the mass shooting thing, so I got just like a slight rant. It's a little rant. And it might be an unpopular opinion, right? But this happened after
Pulse. Be the same opinion as mine.
Might be. This happened after Pulse Nightclub too, where motherfucking black people, I love y'all. Yes, a lot of our history has been erased or discarded or forgotten. But this is not time to pop up in here and be like, no, it ain't the largest act of terrorism because Black Wall Street and Rosewood whatever. I mean, I get it. Like, we need to acknowledge these things. We need to talk about these things. They're relevant. However, neither one of those was mass shootings. Like, yes, black people were shot, but black people were also like houses set on fire. They were also fucked up and fucking Black Wall Street. They used planes to drop bombs. It's actually a larger conversation than just a mass shooting. It's a massacre. It's a genocide. It's whatever. But my thing is, like, we can let this conversation rock and have that conversation separately without having to intersect this tragedy to talk about those, like, nah, y'all already did this to black people yourselves. I just don't know. I just don't like the way we bring it into this narrative at this point in time when there is also a real conversation about gun control to be had that affects us too. You know what I mean? Like, that shit affects us too. So I don't know. And I don't want to sound like the GOP talking about gun control being like, this is not the time to have that conversation. We need to have that conversation, but we don't need to have that conversation and cut this one off and be like, no, don't talk about how big and massive and crazy this is because y'all did this, you know, fucking 80 years ago or whatever. That's all. Or 90
years. Well, yeah, okay. So that was definitely different than mine. I do have a rant though too, which might be unpopular opinions. First of all, and I saw this a lot on Twitter as well. And this is, again, you know, no slight to anybody who was hurt or injured, or his family was, you know, was hurt, injured in this shooting, because that's not what I'm saying. But I just, you know, it's hard not to look at this, as horrific as this Vegas thing is, and see the totally different tone, than what happened when people were killed by, you know, storms and whatnot in the British, in the U.S. Virgin Islands and in Puerto Rico. When that happened, the government, especially Trump, was basically like, barely responded at all. Didn't send people down to Puerto Rico for, you know, several days. I don't know who's in the U.S. Virgin Islands. They ain't even talking about them.
Nobody.
Like, they ain't talking about that shit. Like, they're not even talking about it. Like it didn't even happen. And, you know, this happens in a country music festival. So I'm looking at this as a horrific tragedy as it is. I'm also looking at this from Trump's perspective as I think he's damn near giddy about this shit. Not that people died.
Because he can pander to his base.
Yes, because this is literally a bullseye of his base. And so that, like, he knows that he can go to Vegas, which he's headed there, I think, literally right now. And he's going to, like, put on a big fucking show, the song and dance. He knows
he's
that, right?
He's gonna Vegas it up too. He's gonna make it Vegas level.
That's what I'm saying. He's gonna make it Vegas level. All that shit. He's not even went to Puerto Rico. That's gonna be in his rearview mirror. He ain't gonna discuss that shit no more. I don't even know how much aid they're actually even gonna get, because he's full of shit. I never heard about him actually sending that $1 million to Houston, like he said. So, like, this is just all TV for him. This is just a perfect way for him to pander to his base. It'll keep the Russia shit off the front pages for a long time, and it'll keep the, like I said, keep the Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands thing out of his hair as well, while he caters directly to his base. Now, my second point to my rant is, again, not trying to, you know, be disparaging anybody who died, but yo, this is what his base, this is what they signed up for. No gun control. Y'all wanted to get down like this. Y'all wanted to be wide open. You can carry guns. You can do this. You can do that. And like in the immortal words of the great poet, the American poet, CeeLo Green, thinking it can't happen to you, and then it do. You know what I'm saying? Because right. now y'all in this place, it's all white folks pretty much. It's a country.
But dude, that was, listen, man, when those babies got slaughtered
up Sandy Hook,
Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. And they clowned Obama. They clowned Obama.
And nothing changed. Nothing will change here.
Or when somebody actually shot a congressman as he was trying to shoot a bunch of congressmen,
mm-hmm.
and nothing, like even when they were the targets.
And I
differentiated from Gabby only because Gabby was by herself. And when Scalia got shot, it was a bunch of them, right? Like clearly a bunch of them were targets. But even with that, Scalia just came back this week. They are voting on a bill to make it easier to get silencers like tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it's like, they don't give a fuck. But the other part of this is even there was, one of the band members who performed at the concert put out a statement, that like maybe the very next, yes, early yesterday morning or maybe even late that night, that he's always been a really strong proponent of the Second Amendment. Like the NRA has partnerships with country music artists. Mm-hmm. Like they have mm-hmm. a tagline that's like embrace the lifestyle or some crazy mm-hmm. shit like that. And Vegas is a gun crazy town. Like they go nuts with it. There's no limit on how many firearms you can buy or the time period in Nevada, which is stupid. But he put out a statement that he had been a really strong proponent of the Second Amendment, and he and like his whole entire band, the whole entire crew are licensed. They even had guns like on the tour buses, et cetera. But he was like, but none of that shit mattered at that moment. Like there's no way we could have gotten to them. If we had them on us, there's no way we could have returned fire on this guy. And he was like, and I realized right then, like cowering for my life, trying to send a last minute message to my wife and my kids, like there is no way that a man should have his hands on this kind of ammunition.
I don't know why
it totally changed my perspective.
I don't know why these NRA people with these guns, they think this shit's Die Hard or Taken. Like, oh, if somebody shoots you, I'll just like shoot them and kill them. Like, nigga, like the movies.
Yeah, like you ain't Bruce Willis, my nigga. Yeah, like the fuck?
Like Liam Neeson? Like what you fucking
talking like,
about?
Yeah, like nobody in that spot. First of all, you're not returning fire on no sniper ever.
32 floors up.
Yeah, nobody in that spot. Like, you wouldn't have been able to do it in Dallas when Homeboy was hitting the police officers.
Come on, man.
You're not going to be able to do it here. You're not going to be, like, you're not going to be able to do it. Even if people had guns on them at Pulse, like, people are ignoring what your mind kicks into. They're ignoring fight or flight. They're ignoring possible casualties. They're ignoring close range. They're ignoring time. They're ignoring all of that stuff. Like, you're not going to be a hero. You're not going to fucking save the world. And a lot of these motherfuckers buying all these guns, like you keep them locked up in your fucking gun cabinet anyway. Like you're not about that life, B, like at all. Like let it go.
Yep. Yeah. So like, I mean, again, I'm not trying to, you know, be dismissive of anybody who died or passed away, but this is the America y'all wanted. This is the America you wanted. Now you're getting it. So like, this is what comes with it when you want to have loose gun laws and all right. this stuff. Like, this is what happens. You get guys who get to have arsenals in a hotel room and just settle. Oh, and then let me say this last point. The last point to me, which is very interesting about this thing, is that for the past, you know, day and a half now, they've been trying to find anything to figure out why Stephen Paddock might just not have been a crazy ass white man. It's like, was he tied? Nothing. Was he tied to ISIS? Was he like doing this?
Did he have a gripe? Did he argue with his girlfriend? They have nothing.
He was a crazy ass white man who just set it off. And you know what? And as of now,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just saying they walk among us every day, as proven by Charlottesville.
It's definitely what it's leaning toward. I mean, right now they're still doing a lot of investigation. Apparently, they located a $100,000 payment to the Philippines where his mm-hmm. girl is.
That's where she's from, right?
Where she is currently.
Where she's from, and she's currently there.
Okay.
So they're trying to figure out where that money was to. He had multiple transactions like that. He had massive, cash transactions, a lot with casinos.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily know if this guy was, in debt. Well, yeah, because yeah. because the brother mentioned, you know, he was a wealthy guy, and you know, wealth is very relative. That's a relative right. term. And two, it can also be fronted on. I mean, we from entertainment, we see it every day. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't necessarily know if this was a terrorist attack in the way people would normally quantify a terrorist attack. There was no, it seems as though right now there was no political agenda. He didn't have any sort of neo-Nazi, you know, ties mm-hmm. or any sort of terroristic ties. I mean, ISIS, you know, listen, man, you fucking set off an M80 in a bathroom and ISIS will claim that shit.
Yeah, I could shoot up the bodega across the street and
you ISIS. You know, 64-year-old white man's joining no damn ISIS. Yeah. Come on, man.
Right.
Yeah. Talking about
well,
him.
I mean, you do have to just wait. I want to wait and to see how this investigation goes because there are a shit ton of terrorists, you know, in Philippines. Like, that's a hot spot for terrorist right. activities. I don't know all the ins and outs. I don't know what this man's traveling situation was. I don't know if this, you know, if he got a call saying, if you don't do something this weekend, we gonna kill your girl. I don't know.
Right.
I'm not saying that in defense of him. I'm simply saying that we're still in the infancy of an investigation. Yeah. Right now, his brother looked confused. This yeah. looked like,
oh, fuck.
This looked to be something that was not sitting around and gonna happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said he wasn't a gun collector. And this is why authorities are confused. And a lot of people are taking issue with the fact that news reports are saying that he didn't fit the profile. But what people mean by that is that he didn't fit. You know, there are, I think people are thinking that news reports are saying he didn't fit a physical profile. He doesn't fit the psychological profile of somebody who does this, which is, you know, kind of isolated, kind of reserved, showing.
But that's also, but to me, that's still a little irresponsible for the news to say that because they haven't done the due diligence of an investigation to gather.
They're only
taking what's on the surface, which is he did not seem crazy. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they're also taking the fact that he was somewhat successful, that he actually had a girlfriend that he hadn't broken up with.
But that's
relative, yeah.
Right. That's what I'm saying. They're using this term successful and they're using, listen, if this man has been, they said that he had multiple interactions with cash and banking over $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Those are withdrawals. Those are deposits.
Something was going on. Yeah.
So either he could have very well been, you know, in the worst case scenario, old girl got kidnapped and whatever.
He was in the mob, yeah.
Or fucking broke. He was in debt up to his ass. He couldn't figure it out. He probably went to Vegas for one long weekend, fuck it, and, you know, got drunk and snapped. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, also his money, whatever it was, according to his brother, was in real estate. So we all know that could easily be a house of cards.
It is a house of cards, especially in Nevada. Nevada and Florida were two of the biggest states that had
the biggest housing collapse
over inventory. Yeah. Yes, because they many people's second homes were in those states.
Mm-hmm.
So those were the places that got hit the hardest. Again, I don't know what this man's financial situation is. I don't know what his mental state is. All I know is somebody literally picked off people who were helpless.
Yeah.
Who were helpless. They were in no position. I just couldn't imagine that. This is not, it was crazy. Well, not was crazy to me, but like things.
Yeah.
With my kid.
Yeah.
Like that's right. That's what's so scary about this is that every piece of survival technique that I would try to teach my children to go to a place like that would never help them because there's nothing to do. When somebody has an elevated position and they're just fucking picking you off and spraying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
You're just hoping you don't get shot.
Well, and that's where for me, the term terrorist is accurate, even if it's not the, I guess, law enforcement definition of terrorist, which involves a political agenda or religious agenda, just the fact that you choose a target where people are most vulnerable and most caught off guard, and where you can get to the most people possible as quickly as possible, to me defines terrorism, right?
And so my thing is like, so my question is, if this concert isn't happening, right, does he do this? Go down to the lobby and do this? Like, does he, you know, I guess what I'm saying is, of this guy snapping is unknown, right? But this particular instance of having this many people out there was sort of like, you know, happenstance, right? Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, if does this dude just go out to the strip and just say,
just fuck?
So your question is, did he plan this, or did he just happen to be there and this event was going on?
Yes, and was there a series of events that led him up to this, or was this a planned situation? Was this a, listen, I'm going to Vegas. If I don't win, I'm betting the house on everything, and my girl is in the Philippines. I'm here by myself. We don't know what that situation is. Did she leave him? Did she make, you know what I'm saying? Who the fuck knows? But I don't necessarily know that I don't want to make a statement or have something to stand by until I think there's a little more of the investigation. Now, $100,000 being sent to the Philippines, that's some shit that'll raise an eyebrow. That's a lot of fucking money.
Yeah.
Well,
that's a lot of fucking money.
I will say, in terms of what he chose and was he going to the library or anything, there is some new news coming out now that they've had a chance to really, they're releasing more reports on the search of his room, and that it was extensively pre-planned. He even had cameras in the hallway so that he could see when police were being closed in on. Including one hidden in a food service cart in the hallway so that they would know, you know, as soon as police were close. So based on these facts, it looks like
this was his plan.
Yeah. But again, there's still no motive. And that's what is really got everybody stuck.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just, you know, again, I'm.
And guess what, man? It doesn't even, to be perfectly honest, it doesn't even matter what his motive is, because those people are dead. Those families are destroyed, and nothing will happen. Nothing will happen.
Yep.
Congress will sit up there. They will have their moment of silence.
Those vigils and shit.
Pander. They will do all of the right things. And when it is time for them to actually get off their ass and do something about this and make some changes, they won't. They simply won't. And everyone thinks that this is about taking guns and none of that shit. Listen, I'm a licensed gun owner. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
nobody
trying to take your... Yeah, but you don't fucking need
like assault rifle.
223.
Yeah.
He got a. You don't need a 223 with fucking heavy magazines clip, dude. Like if it takes that many bullets for you to hunt deer.
Yeah.
And fucking quail.
Yeah.
Then you don't need to be out there anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So you guys can miss me with that shit. And you know, and like you said too, man. Another thing that gets on my nerves is like you niggas in this Call of Duty mentality, man. Like you don't get to fucking hit reset, okay? When that's live, rapid fire coming at you, man. I get it, man. You watched a bunch of movies with The Rock. You watched a bunch of movies with Mark Wahlberg. You know what I'm saying? And you think that you would be this badass tough guy, you know, walking out there, man. And guess what, man? I just watched that Vietnam special. And guess what everybody said? When them fucking shots are coming, scared than a motherfucker.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they are Marines. These motherfuckers kick ass. These are Army Rangers.
And also, people always say, seeing somebody get killed in front of you does not look like it looks on TV.
Exactly.
Yo, bullets, I say that all the time, man. Bullets piercing flesh, man, will, like, I was talking to a cop today. He was like, even people that are trained, man, they freeze. It's not all this, you know, it takes a second for some of that shit to register. It's not all, you know, these people think that you just go gung-ho. It doesn't work like that, dude. Like, yeah, you don't know if this guy's by himself. You don't, you know, the police need to to take a second. They just can't run. I mean, they do run into the gunfire, but I'm saying it's not like this movie shit where it's one cop going in the building to take all.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right. So, you know, again, rest in peace and, you know, condolences to everybody. But I just, you know, this was, it, you know, we were leading to this path. This is what we were headed for.
This is not
gonna, and you know what? And this ain't going to be the last one.
This ain't going to be the last one, dude. This is a trend. This is something that, and I don't know if I, and I think I've said this and I mentioned this on the show. I had a dude who was in heavy security who did like real international shit. Like, you know, kidnap rescue, stuff like that. And he talked about this with me years ago. And he was like, the next phase of things you will see will be single person active shooters. Like people just going out. You can cause incredible mayhem. You can cause incredible carnage. You don't need to have this elaborate plan. It doesn't, you know what I'm saying? Like you can go out there with minimal resources and do massive damage. That's why you see a lot of the cars running into crowds and, you know, random ass stabbings on trains in Paris. And that's like the third time in like less than a year that shit has happened. Like it's just wild out here, man.
Yeah, man.
Well, and also I guess, my problem with the gun conversation and the fact that nobody's going to do anything is that we can literally look at, we can look at data. We can look at the number of shooting deaths in the United States. We can look at the escalation of mass shootings over the past few years and literally prove that our lack of gun control is a problem.
Yep.
And motherfuckers still will say that the answer is for more people to buy guns. Like I don't. Like the NRA is so powerful, it's so scary. Cause that really is all this is about. This is actually about the NRA being the biggest and most well-financed lobby coalition.
And gun sales increase.
Yeah.
Gun
sales increase. If you had stock in Smith & Wesson, you just made a grip. You know, so.
Gun sales increase. People are afraid.
Yep. So that's it, man. Yeah, again, you know, condolences to everybody.
Yeah,
and we're gonna wrap it up on that note. You know, hopefully next week will be some lighter news. Hopefully, but this fucking clown.
We're gonna make it lighter.
Yeah, well, we'll this fucking clown in office, though, you never really know. You know what I'm saying? So, but that's it, and we'll see y'all next week.
Later.
Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast. Talk to you next week.